House District 48. Penny Vossler, Democratic candidate, and also Chad Bain, the Republican candidate. And thanks both for coming in today.
Appreciate it.
Great to be here.
So this is here we are. We're getting down to. We don't have much time left for before voters will go. Actually, we already had some. Quite a few of them actually voting already. But the big thing is, we just thought we'd get together and let people have an opportunity to hear you talk about some of the issues, some of the things that you think are important, and some of the things you want to really focus on. Obviously, we are going to have a new representative because Phil Thompson not seeking re-election. Right away, Chad, you said, I'll throw my hat in the ring. So let's give everybody a little bit of background about yourself.
Yeah, I was born and raised in Boone County, grew up on a farm, went to Boone High. Went to DMAC. I always laugh. We got that connection, that deep connection. My brother played baseball there. I played basketball. Little sister played volleyball. Brother-in-law baseball. And my son played baseball there. So deep connection through the DMAC side of things. I got recruited out of the state, played basketball, graduated in communications, and came back to farm. And so got a chance to run for supervisor in 2016 and got through that process. And it's been a good thing.
Spent some time there. And Penny, this is your second run for this seat. So
This is.
So let folks know a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm also a farm kid. Grew up in an organic farm, Northeast Montana, farm and ranch. So equally at home on a horse or a tractor. Off to college because I was never much of a gambler, and farming seemed like a gamble to me. Gambling on the weather, gambling on prices. So I thought the steady paycheck would be the way to go. First degree in mathematics, 13 years as a high school math teacher. I also taught computer science and wood shop, and was a volunteer EMT during those years. A new career in took a degree in computer science and began working at the Aero Data Center outside of Sioux Falls. Ended up ending up as an associate scientist on a NASA satellite project. More education, off to Colorado, a cartography job and a master's in GIS, which brought me to Iowa for that best reason of all, grandma time. My only grandchild was here in Iowa. My son was at Iowa State with his family. And so I came to spend time and be close to them. And my favorite job has been, and Chad and I actually worked together at the courthouse overlapping because I was GIS coordinator for better than 10 years.
And again, that's been one of the things. I remember when you guys were looking at this and said, we need to have somebody who's going to stay around for a while.
Yep.
Because you were having them for a year or two, and all of a sudden they were gone. So.
Yep. And it worked out nice. She did a great job. They come in weekly or close to it. Yeah. So we got real familiar, and it was nice.
So issues that are high on your priority list, I'm guessing for both of you, it might be a little bit different. Penny, what are some of the things that you kind of focus on?
As a former teacher, education, of course, is really high. And the underfunding, the chronic underfunding of the school system in Iowa is just shameful, honestly. Iowa used to be the gold standard nationwide. I took the Iowa Basic Skills Test back in Montana. I had a friend in New Jersey and a friend who grew up in California who took the same test. So Iowa was the gold standard, and people measured their education against Iowa. Chronically funding below the rate of inflation is a cut every year to the dollars that the purchase power that school has, and I would like to get us back to supporting education the way Iowa used to.
Okay. Chad, one of the high priorities for you?
The tax structure. You've got the property tax, you've got the state tax, how those two work together, and that, you know, coming from the supervisor background and that local control and how property tax affect and businesses come into town and so on and so forth. And the state has had for a while, I don't know how far back, that upfront money that they give to businesses to bring them into the state. And that system, it just doesn't sound good. You know, you might even be giving some of your tax dollars to a competitor. And I just think it needs to be a lower tax system that comes in and is across the board straight for businesses. And if they're attracted, they come in. And then to keep them, we use tax credits in a lot of cases. So you're picking this company to give a tax credit to and not this company. And so you're just, you're in a world where, hey, get out of the way. Let taxation just be a one rate, low price that attracts business. Mm-hmm. So
some tax reform in particular. I do know, and we'll talk a little bit about the income tax, because we know that was one of the big things, and we're in the midst of going through the process of headed towards a flat tax. Each kind of probably have a different opinion about that. I'll go with Chad first. Your thoughts on, again, what the legislature has done so far, and should it be refined, or should we let it play itself out?
Well, I kind of think it ought to take a breath for a minute. Right now, the state tax in Iowa has come down quite a bit. And so on our scoring on a national level, we're at a decent place for a state tax. I'm sure there's guys that want to be more aggressive and take it down further, but our property tax is relatively high. And mm-hmm. so there's a balance that needs to be struck. And we've lowered state taxes to the point where I think, hey, let's start to focus on property tax and run through that side of things. Because property taxes are a huge burden, and sometimes paying for things that may or may not ought to be paid for. You just saw mental health get shifted from what was a property tax to
the state level. Yeah.
And part of that, or part of my worry, is you have local governments that have taxing authorities, and you got to be careful when you lower or take on some state tax that mm-hmm. that the local boys drop their tax rate commiserate. You know, when that mental health, I think there was probably only about half.
Half of the counties were in the position Boone County was in.
Correct. And so they had the ability to lower property taxes. Some didn't, some didn't. And so there's still a big responsibility of the local governments to take care of some of that taxing authority. But ultimately, I still think the state probably ought to dive into the property tax side. And that would be the stance or the thought process that I'd take down there, is that, hey, there needs to be some property tax relief. We've lowered state quite a bit. Let's let that settle into place a little bit. And I know there are guys that want to take that all the way down. Mm-hmm. But I think property tax right now will probably be more of a focus.
Okay. We'll come back to that topic again, but I want Penny to talk a little bit. The flat tax issue, I know you have some concerns about that.
Absolutely, and rightly so. We're already, the budget analysis showed a $200 million deficit coming up in the, you know, after 1 year of the flat tax reduction, we're down to a $200 million deficit in our budget. It was a bad idea. It's been tried by other states. It has failed in other states. They've basically bankrupt their state. I have a lot of elderly people that I'm talking with as I door knock that are concerned with, when we quit funding the state with income tax, that what's left? Property taxes and sales taxes. And so they're worried that their costs are going to go up. Mm. Instead of the people who are working currently and paying the tax rate, it's going to fall onto our retired population. Mm-hmm. So it's absolutely a really bad idea. And I agree with Chad. Property taxes would have been a better place to make tax cuts.
We do know that some work was done in the last session. And again, some restrictions were put on property taxes for growth and stuff like that. We still have the issue of valuations. And frankly, after looking at some of the residential sales that have happened here in Boone County, they're going up. They're going to go up again next year. But that's part of the issue, is when you get your valuations, it is simply a math problem that the assessor does. He takes a look at what the houses are selling for, what it is, and what kind of changes we need to make there. So I fully think that's going to be happening. But on the valuation side, it does get people a little mixed up on how much is valuation, what is it valued at, and then how much can it be taxed for.
Right. People have the misconception that the assessor setting your valuation then sets your taxes, and that's not the case. It is those entities like the Board of Supervisors, hospital boards, these other tax authorities that set their mill levies, and that's where your tax rate comes. So if valuation goes up and they want to not increase your taxes, they need to drop their mill levy. If they leave the mill levy the same, they have increased your taxes, mm-hmm. Claiming that they haven't. So
it's the trick of the numbers there. Chad, you've been through it at the county level. And again, those are some of the things as values go up. And again, the way Iowa's property tax structure is not, well, I want to say it's complex, okay? let's just leave it at that. There's a lot of variables that go into it. Residential housing, it ties in with what ag land is valued at. And again, values for ag land, you can only have so much increase and there can only be so much difference. And actual tax asking can only go up so much, too. So there are a number of limitations in there. But the big thing is a lot of people really don't follow along with what's happening.
Yeah, and she's right. Those taxing authorities have the ability to change the multiplier. And so ultimately, the assessor's job is to assess that at market value,
yep.
Plain and simple, and then kind of get out of the way. And so when they see those assessments go up and then they see their tax bill go up, they kind of run those two things together. And again, she's right. It's a multiplier that you got to deal with. And so the taxing authorities need to take responsibility when taxes go up. There's a final asking, and you can lower that that multiplier. And so the rates, according to state law, you get equalized if you don't come out with the right assessment. So our assessor has to come out with the right assessments. And to me, he kept on the low side of those. I don't know if we were ever in huge threat of being equalized, but it was kind of a talk and a worry point at some point. So if anything, he was on the low side, and then, which I think is good. I mean, I'd rather keep it a little bit, those assessments on the low side than the high side. So they've got to do that according to state law. He's doing his job and he's coming up with the assessments that are market value. And so the people just need to understand that, hey, you need to go to your taxing authorities. And taxing authorities are layered and they're simple, but they're complex in the sense that the understanding that, hey, there's different parts in this county that have 5-6 different taxing authorities for the same piece of property. And so you've got the schools that are involved, you've got the hospital, and you've got all these different entities. So you just got to understand that the assessor is kind of out of the picture. And as long as they're within realm of market value on your place, and the best way to do that is contact your local realtor and find out how close they are.
That's one thing I was going to say, because Paul has been there, I'll just throw his name out there, but he, of course, is retiring too, but we've never had an equalization since he's been here. So
yeah,
that's the good side of it. I know that the legislature did some things, and there have been concerns, again, on the property tax side, some limitations that are out there and the impacts that it might have on some of the communities. In our Boone County area, we are seeing growth, which is helping immensely to cover some of the potential shortfall there. At some point in time, though, that can be an issue. So I know that they just started implementing some of those changes that they did on property tax. Is this something you would like to see? Okay, let's give it a year and see how it keeps working out. Do we need to make adjustments? What kind of obviously, there's going to be things that'll jump out right away, but how deep would you like to go into it?
Well, the property tax side, that's what I just talked about, obviously, a minute ago, so we're dovetailing off of that. But ultimately, I think property tax relief is important. When you have a community that's growing, if you take some of the Des Moines, Ankeny areas that are growing so fast, you can't get out of the way, and you've got property tax or money flying everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so it changes the way you do it. And we've stayed relatively level for a while, but we do see growth. We've seen it in different either utilities, wind farms, mm-hmm. solar will probably be moving in, oil, DAPL. Those were all property tax relief. So there has been some property tax relief. Mental health just got taken off the books here a couple years ago. And so I still think property tax would probably be the focus because ultimately I think that is where our burden has shifted to a little bit. And so we've got to bring that down.
Okay. And Penny, same thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Property taxes. We may be growing in Boone as a county, and one of the very few rural counties in the state that has. A lot of them have a shrinking population, and they're really struggling.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a lot of elderly, a lot of fixed income people in Boone County, and when these property taxes increases, it's hard. It's hard for them. So we really need to take a close look at this. We need to.
Okay. I know, because it comes up a lot, and it has over the many years that I've been doing this. It is not, it is a complex process, and what you do in one area impacts other areas. And so it does take a lot of time to make any kind of progress at all. And I think in the last couple of years, we've seen more on the tax reform side. And I know that some think, okay, we got to keep going, and some like, Chad said earlier, let's go right away. And others are going, oh, let's slow down and see what kind of impacts we're having here. So both, I guess, would like, if something is obvious, let's try to take a step at it, but we need to look at what the impact's going to be on the rest of the...
Yeah, that's definitely the thought process. And again, on the property tax side, maybe turn that up a little bit as far as cutting into that. But the state thing, I do think taking a breath would be kind of the best thing. And seeing where the budget lands, seeing where a lot of these other spending areas are coming in and the growth of Iowa and the businesses that are attracted to it.
Yeah. We're already seeing that it is an issue for the state.
Mm-hmm.
We're going into deficit spending already, or not deficit spending, but spending down our surplus.
Which was pretty substantial.
It was, mostly off the back of our school children, but by underfunding our schools by almost the exact same amount as our surplus was.
Let's talk a little bit about school funding, because I know that's one of the things that was done. And, of course, we have our private schools getting some funds transferred over to them. I know you like that program that was
correct. Yeah, the ESAs I was a big proponent of. I think when you introduce competition into this stuff, I think it helps both sides. And that's kind of been the missing piece that doesn't, in my opinion, get talked about enough. Ultimately, there were a lot of things in public schools that get brought up. If you take cell phones, you know, there was a lot of blowback from parents on cell phones and what you could and couldn't do. And so sometimes I think you see, hey, let's just back away from this, you know, no big deal. Deal with it later. You start to introduce competition where parents can say, hey, I'm going to take my kid someplace else. There are things that you need to address and take care of curriculum wise and different things. And so as far as the private schools getting public money, I think that's the rub that you hear about. Mm-hmm. It follows the child. It puts the parents and the children in control. And I don't think that's a bad thing at all. You've introduced competition and you give money to the people who should have it. And then they get to choose what's best for their kids. I don't know what's wrong with that system. And the upfront money and some of the spending that came with that, that's part of taking a breath, in my opinion, on some of the state-level tax. You know, that silo and how schools get funded, you know, the state contributing, let's call it roughly $7,500 and whatever it is compared to the total cost per pupil, let's call it half. Now you've got to figure out when that goes missing up against the silo and how the property taxes get back funded through school and so on and so forth. So right now that's part of the, hey, let's kind of figure this thing out. Let's let this thing settle let that take off. Because we want to be an example for the whole nation, in my opinion. That's something that I think is very, very important good for the kids.
Penny, I know you like public funds, public schools.
Absolutely, absolutely. There are a couple strong issues with taking our public tax dollars and giving it to a private school. For one, the bill was written that we have absolutely no auditing power, no control whatsoever on how they spend the money. Now, in our public school systems, we can look at every nickel that's spent and make sure it's spent wisely. In a private school, we can't even look at the books at all. We have no idea what they're spending the money on. If they decide to ship their entire staff to Hawaii for a week in the summer, that's absolutely fine with our tax dollars. And this is such an unequal system. We have so many counties in this state that have no private school option. There is no other option. Their tax dollars are being spent in other areas, and their schools are suffering. We have been underfunding inflation this year. Schools were given a 2.5% increase. We all know inflation was far more than 2.5%. That is a cut to their spending power. That is a cut to the number of teachers that they can attract and retain, a cut in how often they can update textbooks. You know, their fuel bills, their electric bills, these things do not go down every year. So when we give them fewer dollars to work with, they are really struggling. We're losing teachers to every state around us because they all pay better. Iowa has not prioritized public education. And then we're taking millions, $250 million this first year out of our public school education and giving it to private schools with no accountability whatsoever. Absolutely wrong.
We did get some salary increases for teachers. They did put some money in there for teacher increases in teacher
beginning teacher pay, right?
Yeah.
And first year.
Then, as you understand it, then it's the
reason. Yeah. But nothing for the next year when pay goes up. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Thoughts on this?
Well, ultimately, that comes down to that competitive. If and I'm not picking on her example because she would have other examples, but if you take, there's accountability inside this stuff. And taking your child to a particular spot and getting a good education, you research it. You don't just do it off a whim. And if they're vacationing with the money that you pay them, I think there would be some self-regulation inside of that. As far as the public schools and the funding for public schools, that goes back a long, long ways. And ultimately, you could increase that kind of exponentially every year, and there, in a sense, would never be enough. And so you've got to figure out a dollar amount that you think you're willing to pay per student and the effective economic aspect of that, too. That's onto property taxes, because if you go run that up, you've run property taxes up in a sense. And so you can't cut property taxes and pay everyone $200,000 a year to teach. And so you're some of that stuff falls back and runs together. And so you kind of can't have it both ways in a sense. But our education, I think if you look around against surrounding states, if you look at Iowa holistically, I think we're in a good place economically. I think we're in a good place spending. I think the legislature's been very responsible and hasn't run up. There are other states that are in my opinion, real trouble. And so spending into the rainy day fund and doing that stuff, they're making judgments. That's why they do it, is they sponge it. And that was, you know, part of probably the ESA upfront money that they needed to get going. And so they've looked at that. I think they've looked from a business sense. I think they've been responsible with it. I think we're in a good place.
Any of you heard concerns about the ESA? And
absolutely. I have a friend who's a speech therapist. And she says that she used to spend all 5 days of the week working with children. Now she has to spend her entire Friday doing paperwork for the new system. It requires so much more paperwork that she has less time that she can spend with children that need help. And she had a student transfer to another school, and we've lost over 400 staff members from our ESAs.
AEAs.
From the AEAs. Okay. From the AEAs that left the state or went to took a different job. Schools are short-staffed. She had a young boy that needed speech therapy that moved to another school system, and she contacted them to talk about his education and what he needed, and they said, well, we are short-staffed members. We might just have to do telemedicine with him or telehealth, you know, not even an in-person for speech therapy. That's one of the things where they so need to be able to see or even touch the face of the person making the sound so they can figure out how to make sounds. And it's just heartbreaking, the lack of concern for our most vulnerable citizens in this state. We can do better.
And I think ultimately the ESA, and it's not, I know she knows the difference between ESA and AEA, but the AEA got revamped, and that's more the area that she's talking about when it comes to speech.
Actually have a private company that actually does the allocates the funds for it. Have you heard any issues? Have people encountered any problems with it? You know,
no. I'm sure there's some hiccups in that, and that's back to that new system. Hey, let's get this thing right, and they've changed their criteria year by year, and I think it's getting ready to be full scale.
Wasn't there a large increase in the cost over what the original contract was on that?
Could be. I don't know. I'm staying out of that part. But there may have been some.
One more problem with the private schools. It's people say it's parents' choice, but it's really not. The private school gets to choose which students they admit and which they do not. Plus, most in the state raise their fees after the voucher system came out.
Yeah.
So if you couldn't afford private school before, you probably can't afford private school now. Okay. So a lot of issues. My suggestion would be, rather than putting this money into private education, we could have a voucher system for daycare, and that would impact so many families that are struggling. Daycare is neither available or affordable for most, for so many people. I mapped the daycare systems mm-hmm. for our sheriff's department, say 3 years ago, we had 52 in Boone County. 2 years later, I mapped it, and we were down to 26 daycare providers. Half in 2 years' time. And parents are suffering. This is part of the reason we have a worker shortage, because someone's home with the kids. Our grandparents are having to take care of their grandchildren or quit work to provide daycare for their children. It's a tough situation.
I want to go back to let Chad talk a little bit about AEAs, the operation that went in. And again, that was something the governor wanted to promote. Didn't quite go as far as she wanted. The legislature actually kind of held back on doing some of this. They thought it was a pretty big step to take.
Yeah, and kudos to the governor. She takes on issue after issue. You know, there was a lot of legislative sessions where they wanted, like, hey, we just got done with unions. We just got done with this. We got done with that. And she has gone from issue to issue to issue. And if you take, you know, the overall thought process of government, you want it to work well, you want all these things of government, streamlined, efficient performance. And so sometimes inside these programs, they say, hey, we're sliding downhill. Year over year, the AEA system was going a little bit mm-hmm. downhill. So why wouldn't you try and fix it? I understand it's a big issue, and it's something that you know you're going to get beat up on. But ultimately, the thought process was that thing's sliding downhill. The regents weren't staying in perfect communication with the school. And so they said, hey, let's turn it back over to the local schools, and let's give them some more authority and pull a little bit out of the regents, because they're just not as in touch as the school systems themselves. I think that's a wonderful idea. As far as the end product, we'll know over time. But as you look at government programs, and not worrying about our public education going down, not worrying about AEAs not performing well, that's crazy to me. I mean, if they're not doing well, you got to change something, and you got to change what you're doing. ESAs was a change. AEA, they went in and revamped the program, and they took on tough issues. That's fantastic. And we'll know more over a given amount of time. But right now, handing that back over to local authorities, in a sense, and allowing them to be more in touch with the situation, I think is a fantastic idea.
We do know that, again, these are things that are already in the works. Obviously, a new representative probably wouldn't be able to have very much input on what's happening there. A lot of it's going to be learning where we are and how it's moving forward. But there are priorities you have, obviously, that you want to focus on.
Obviously. Some of my priorities, I'd kind of have to disagree with Chad on the governor's agenda. And I have to say that she seems to be pushing Iowa backwards in time. She's decimating our school systems. The AEA system had tiny little, when they did their survey, they checked into it. There wasn't really much wrong, and she dismantled the entire system. Now our small school systems can't afford to have a staff person for everything. It used to be there was a pool. So if Perry, in their tragic mm-hmm. time, they pulled counselors from the AEA system statewide, brought in everything they needed. Right now, they're just giving schools a little bit of money and saying, figure it out. You hire your own people. You bring in your own people. There used to be a pool, so when you had a certain special situation, you could draw from that pool and utilize those resources as long as you needed them. You did not have to have each of these staff specialists on staff at your school. It made it so much harder. Rather than trying, she made no effort to fix the system, tell us what's wrong, and make an effort to fix them. She just dismantled it and gave it to a private corporation. It's costing them more, and they're getting fewer services. So, book bans, abortion bans, so many things that we did not want, we didn't ask for in this state. And we, the last thing we need in Iowa is another yes man rubber stamping whatever horrible idea our governor comes up with.
Okay, that's we have a Penny's assessment. There we go. Did want to ask, as long as we're talking about school safety, obviously, because right next to Perry, still a hot topic. And we know that the report came out, and again, there weren't going to be any criminal charges. I think some of the media is a little concerned about that. But the bottom line is, it appears that it was a failure to be able to provide services, specifically mental health, in this case, to deal with some of the issues that young man had.
Yeah, the mental health system in Iowa obviously just got, I wouldn't call it revamped, it was the changing of the funding and the sourcing. And I served on a mental health board, CICS, while I was in the supervisor role. And some of those questions are almost impossible. You would say, hey, parental involvement, okay? You'd say, hey, the parents that cared, that made the biggest difference. And then you start to get to the point where it was enough out of control. You're like, hey, the state's got to get involved. And then you would have NAMI and you'd have these different entities ultimately say, oh, we don't know what to do with it. And there was these tugging heart stories. It was very, very emotional. And so you're sitting here like, man, what do we do? And a lot of times it comes with drug addiction and different things. And then which one was first and so on and so forth. So to me, running it through the state, I actually like running that through the property taxes. I think it was regulated better monetarily. The staff over there, in my opinion, they did a better job of making sure they came out and the funds were spending. As it gets turned over to the state, or now as the state, it's going to be a cry for more and more and more, just like education. And so it'll change the way that funding comes in. Philosophically, probably pulling it from the state's better. I'm not sure property mm-hmm. tax, that should have been a property tax burdens. But we're going to enter a whole new realm now of, hey, there's not enough money in mental health and we need more, more, more. So ultimately, we need to run that well. I think better advertising, better avenues, better education on how to go get help. I would have friends that would call me, hey, I've got this situation going on. It's a family member. What do I do? And so kind of education on how to get to those areas, I think, is probably the biggest thing that I would be an advocate for and point them at least in the right direction on where to start and how to do it. But mental health is hard, and it's scary, and it's emotional, and it's everything. And so you've got to really focus on what the patient needs and where the best mm-hmm. place to get those needs are from.
Okay. Penny, your thoughts?
My thought is the closing of so many of our mental health facilities in the last couple of decades has left Iowa really, really short on services and providers. I would advocate for setting up some regional crisis centers, and not just for mental health, but we are a healthcare desert. We have fewer OBGYNs per capita than any state in the United States. We have the lowest number, so it is a dangerous place for a woman to be pregnant. And if we could set up some regional mental health centers where everybody in every part of the state had access to not just mental health, but medical care as well, for emergency, for crisis mm-hmm. situations. I've had conversations with our previous sheriff and the current one, and they have a real problem with if there's somebody in crisis, a mental health crisis, they end up in police custody, and it's really not the place to be. They need a mental health professional. But there is no bed available. They call every place in Iowa. They call our surrounding states to find a place where this person can have, you know, mm-hmm. care. And then if they find something two states over, we end up short our officers because they have to transport, two of them, transport this person across a state or two to find a place where they can get care. So a regional crisis center would probably help alleviate a lot of that, but it would take an investment and a concerted effort by our legislature to make it happen.
I'm sure you've been through that, having served on that Central Iowa Community Service.
Yeah, and again, it's back to those impossible questions. There's a Rose Center here in Boone, and there's things that are there, but the education and the ability to they need to do a better job of advertising, in my opinion, because there are crisis centers. There's one right here in Boone. Now, whether there needs to be a regional one or not, that's her opinion mm-hmm. on how to handle that and grow that system. But ultimately, it is a problem. There's more and more mental health issues going on. It's something.
And fewer providers.
It's a growing issue. There's no doubt about it. And again, with it being state funded, and CICS and the regions will have their asks, I'm sure, down at the state. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be something to address if you get down there.
School security, Penny, because, yes, we did have the shooting down there. And I know the legislature did pass where the teachers do have the right to, I guess, right to carry if they're licensed or get certified for it. Not a lot of them have stepped up to do that.
Well, terrible idea. First of all, if you have teachers carrying guns in schools, you're going to have trouble finding an insurance company that will insure your school. So that's why most of them are not doing it. More guns in schools. We have professional police officers that respond to that. When they have to fire their firearm, they shoot what they're, or hit what they're shooting at something like 20-some percent of the time. And these are people who practice all the time and are professionals and supposedly trained and cool under fire. And still, most of the time, they don't hit what they're shooting at. So having a bunch of teachers with how much training? Mm-hmm. There's not time in a teacher's life for very much. And to give them a firearm, say they miss what they're shooting at, it goes through that sheetrock wall into the next classroom. That's just a really, really bad idea. If we can do, we need common sense, people. We need common sense gun laws. I think every gun should come with a trigger guard. People should be not only told how to use it, but it should be required. So that would be a crime to not have your gun locked up or safe in some way so that it can't. We have so many instances where a child will get a hold of a gun that's not locked up and kill their sibling or a friend. So that would be one thing. Another thing is we can wait 3 days or a week for a firearm purchase so that they can do a background check. People with mental health issues need to be, there is a system, it needs to be utilized better. People have to, you know, mandatory input information into that system. So we keep handguns out of people who are having issues and shouldn't have them.
School resource officers are good for school safety.
That really hasn't worked out very well, has it?
Don't know.
Several of our school shootings have happened where they had an armed officer on duty. So I think it would be better off to, again, mental health. Good one, yeah. Chad. We do need to provide more mental health services to make sure that people don't get to that point in their life.
Chad, I know you support school resource officers and steps like that.
Yeah, ultimately, if you look at that, it's more of the deterrent side, probably. Mm-hmm. The no gun zone, I think, attracts school shootings. I mean, if you look at what the thought process is of someone that's going through that, with mental health aside, with no guns in the school. So just having guns present, in my opinion, is a big deal. And you can learn, teachers can learn to shoot guns. That's, I don't think, beyond their skill set and their abilities to do. They're very, very resilient and have the ability to do that. So I trust them if they want to carry to learn that and take care of that. But ultimately, those deterrents. And then a lot of times, back to mental health and back to the communication process, a lot of these times we see these students are threatening. These students are problems. And they know that they're unhinged. They make threats previous to, a lot of times it's not a surprise. And so again, it's back to that tying mental health in and tying some ability to make a correction. And sometimes schools don't do that. And who's supposed to do that? Does that come from the top? Does it come from the principal, superintendent? Who's supposed to come in and say, hey, wait a minute, you're making threats. You can't do that. And so we've got our law has to be, have some authority and the ability to come in and say, hey, if you're going to start making those threats, we have some bite and have some ability to get some prosecution done, pulled out of school, done whatever, and get them to the right place.
Yeah. All right.
One more thing that is helpful, if all gun owners, I'm a gun owner, and before I got my first hunting license at the age of 12, I had to take a hunter safety course and learn how to safely handle a firearm and to respect that firearm. Nowadays, you can walk into a store and buy a gun with absolutely no instruction. And I think that's dangerous. I think everybody should have to take and pass a course on how to safely handle and safely store a firearm. It goes back to building respect for that as a dangerous weapon. It's like our car. You're not allowed to drive a car on our roads without some training and passing a test because it's dangerous. And you can't tell me firearms are not dangerous.
Want to talk economic development, because you touched on that a little bit. You have some concerns about some of the processes that are used for incentivizing economic development. I know you also would like to see some work done to lighten the load of requirements.
Yeah, ultimately, it's kind of a neat process. Landis did an invitation and went out there, toured that plant. And as they're going through it, they're talking about economic development and what it means and the infrastructure and so on and so forth. And so as supervisor, when we were there, the 17 overpass was a big project that we took on, and they cited that as one of the big draws to Boone. And so understanding economic development and the utilities and the infrastructure and being able to do that, that's something that I'm aware of. I know needs to be done, but it's a hard visionary thing to picture. Hey, we need $25 million. We need to redo our roads. We need to figure out water. We need to figure out utilities. We need to make these investments up front. So Boone has been aggressive with that. I think they share now with Ames on their economic development side. But there was a lot of work done to kind of grease the skids for that. And that's awesome to hear that some of that stuff, those risks you took, some of the guff you took for railroad crossings and how we're going to make this project go and whether it's worth it, some of the payout for businesses now to be attracted to the area, I think is great.
I'm guessing one of the issues you have would be like the large tech complexes that come in, things like that. Where there's a lot of money that's laid out for that.
Yeah, and that upfront money, again, that could be, to have a system where you kind of overcharge and then take that money and disperse it to your pickings and choosings, I just don't think it's a good system. You're getting involved in an area that you can't make that decision, in my opinion, for the people of Iowa. Just let the tax climate be good, that the businesses see, hey, Iowa's an attractive place to grow. They're a low tax climate state. They've got everything in order and they're going along well, and that's where we want to do business. You take John Deere, they got tax credits and they were ready to take off. I don't know what's going to end up with that.
We'll see.
But they were getting tax credits. And so those tax credits, again, if you're funding, hey, John Deere, stay, John Deere, stay, John Deere, stay with these tax credits, I just don't think it's a system that works well long-term and is equitable against other businesses that, in my opinion, deserve that same tax credit stuff. Why would you pick them to stay and not these guys? So I think it's better just to run the tax climate straight away so that every company has the same opportunity and you're not giving money, you know, sometimes even against your competitors. How fair is that? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Okay. Your thoughts on economic development, Penny?
Yeah, I agree that tax credit is not sustainable or fair. I've got to say the City of Boone has been doing a great job in economic development. It seems they've been bringing a lot of businesses in. We've got the Daisy plant coming in now. Plus, they've got the foresight to build new housing, various kinds of housing. We got the low-income housing. There are 2-3 new subdivisions still going in in the City of Boone. I've walked by the construction areas. There are a lot of considerations when you're doing these things, such as water and sewer usage. That was the big thing with the city recently. We've got $15 million of water and sewer work to do. Although the taxes, or the fees and the taxes that Daisy will pay that back in a pretty short time. And we needed that done anyway. We were approaching the limits of what we could do with our existing infrastructure. So as Chad mentioned, there are a lot of things that you need to consider when you're putting in economic development like this.
You know, the state's been aggressive. They did on Daisy, but have on several others. Incentive grants, I think MG Biologics comes to mind. They're also one out on the east end of the county. Small, but growing. And again, it's they're adding on, growing on. We talked about Landis and the things they have done, too. So there are things happening, not just here, but other parts of the state. Regulations, let's talk a little bit about that, because I know that's one thing that does have an impact on businesses and their operations. Are they getting too many regulations? Are we getting too few? Do we have a decent balance?
That I really don't know.
Okay. That would be a learning experience.
That's an area, right. There's going to be so much. Fortunately, I have a lot of experience at learning, learning new things, education, doing the homework, doing the reading, so I have no doubt that I will be able to. Plus, I do not expect to end up on every. You know, you don't expect to end up on every committee. Sure. I assume I will be put somewhere where my current skill set is most beneficial.
Okay. What about you? Regulations?
The regulatory side of things, and there's nothing specific. It would be hard to get into the specific, so there's nothing special about this. But the regulatory side is so hard, because if you take the drainage districts and you have economic development, someone comes in and sets a building right on top of a drainage district. Okay, well, now you got a problem. Well, I'm not huge for regulating anything. Okay, I like the ability to come in and take property, buy it, and do what you want to do with it, within a sense. And so, because of the urban sprawl, as you call it, some of this regulatory stuff is good, and some of it's going to be bad. So, I'm not huge into regulatory stuff, but at the same time, they start messing up drainage districts, and then that costs the drainage districts tons of money. There's a lot of stuff expanding into Boone County, out of Story County, that, again, is hitting drainage district stuff hard right over in that area. And so there needs to be a balance. And there would be no way to say that I'm pro-regulation or against regulation. There are some necessary times that you need to get in and make sure that the system is working together. And so whether it's hospitals and certificate of need, and you know, you take a look at some of that stuff that jumps into what I would call free enterprise. Hey, if someone wants to build an ultrasound facility right here, why wouldn't they be able to do it? Well, now you're cutting into some of what the hospital's profitability is, and they're regulated all to beat heck. And so some of that stuff is not really free market. So these guys that just pound their fists and say, hey, free market, free market, free market, they do have to be aware that there does need to be some regulatory stuff and paying attention to the bigger overall scale of stuff.
Yeah. Eminent domain.
Yeah.
I'll let you go, because I know you've had some dealings with different companies.
Yeah, the layering of Summit is so deep, and it ties back to kind of my stance on government involvement. If you take the Inflation Reduction Act, which was really a climate change bill, kind of the Green New Deal, it got government involved into the system. Okay, now you've got carbon indexing, you've got different scorings. And so you say this pipeline comes out, no private company said, hey, this is a great idea to go take emissions off of ethanol plants and run it up to North Dakota. That's all government-driven Inflation Reduction Act. And there's a little bit of irony inside of government spending, which causes inflation. So when that comes out of the Inflation Reduction Act, it hurts me just a little bit more. And again, it's more the Green New Deal than anything. But those emissions and what they're doing with that is going to pit farmer on farmer. You've got the legislators all up in huff down in there. South Dakota, did that ruling come out today or
yesterday? I think it was.
Yeah, just yesterday. So that might be squashed. That might not even be something the legislatures have to be addressed. Mm-hmm. There's so much money into it. A lot of the legislators think, hey, that's still going to be an issue. But you've got the utilities board who deemed it a utility. That's what the lawsuit was over, and that's what's caused the problem. I'm not for sure that's a utility. Let's be honest. It's it's emission type stuff.
I know you both agree on that.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so you take the idea that we need to capture this emission and put it underground. And so you're going to have some the Democrats on the side and their thought process. I'm going to be curious what she thinks ultimately is that, hey, that's a thought process, a climate change process. Hey, let's capture emissions coming out of these plants and let's run it up there. Well, now they're against pipelines, and they've had a lot of their people say, hey, we don't want pipelines. So you've got eminent domain, which is huge. You've got private companies diving in, clamoring for government money. That's one of the reasons I don't like government spending and big government contracts, is because now here Summit knows, hey, this money is guaranteed. It's going to be spent. There's going to be a ton of it. And businesses no longer, these business ethanol plant, they're making more money off environmental provisions than they are. You know, it used to be, hey, I want good employees, I bought my propane right, I bought my water right, I ran my plant correct, I make X amount of dollars. Well, now it's not that. That's not the business model anymore. It's how much environmental money I can grab. And so it's a broken system. I mean, top to bottom. And so it's been used as a form of control. It's going to be used as a form of control over farming. Cover crops are going to start to be incentivized to the point where even if you don't want to do it, they're going to make it economic to do it. So you've got this environmental movement. In my opinion, some of it has been about the true cause. Mm-hmm. Other has been about control and expansion of government. And you're seeing that right now. In the most clear thing that you can ever see in this eminent domain pipeline issue and the safety involved in it, there's a lot going on.
Okay. Eminent domain. I know Penny's, our guys are on the same page.
Yeah, it's a big no. For a number of reasons, some that Chad has mentioned, but one of my biggest is this is an unproven technology. We don't even realize or don't know for sure if it's going to make much of a difference at all. There's a huge amount of energy that's needed to compress that carbon down into a liquid and to push it through that pipeline. Huge amount, not just energy, but water is the big thing. Now, Summit was doing some sneaky little stuff by taking out water requests in different names instead of one big corporate request because they use such huge amounts of water in this process. Iowa's got some drought issues and some groundwater receding mm-hmm. issues that we cannot afford to be given this corporation the rights to that much water. Without some, at least a groundwater study, and that has not been done to see if it's at all feasible. And I've never talked to a farmer that said, "Hey, this is my Century Farm. It's been in my family for a long time, and I own some farm ground that my grandfather homesteaded." And no farmer has ever said, "Why don't you take my land for your private profit?"
There we go. So I knew pretty much where you guys were going to be on that. A couple of quick other things coming up. I know, Penny, I'm going to ask you first about abortion rights and issues like that. I know you're very outspoken about that. So
for good reason. I am a survivor of a tubal pregnancy, an ectopic pregnancy. And for those who don't know, that's where an egg is fertilized and it doesn't make it to the uterus. It gets stuck in the tube along the way and begins to expand, to grow. There is no good outcome for that. There is no medical procedure that can salvage that pregnancy. It was my first one, and we wanted a child. But the procedure that saved my life, the emergency surgery that saved my life before it ruptured, that it is the leading cause of death in the first 3 months of pregnancy. Pregnancy is not just an inconvenience. It is more dangerous than serving in the military. You have a better chance of some catastrophe happening than you do as being a soldier for the United States. So this procedure is now illegal in the state of Iowa. They say, oh, there are exceptions. Well, you've got an exception for what? You can go to another state for your emergency surgery? It makes no sense. At least one out of four pregnancies end in a miscarriage. The procedure for dealing with a miscarriage can get a doctor thrown in jail or lose their license for providing the normal procedure that you do to care for a woman after a miscarriage. This bill was written with no medical input whatsoever. It's vague. It's unenforceable as it is. Doctors don't know what to do with it. It doesn't even use medical terminology, so they don't know what they can and cannot do. Pregnancy is way too complicated to be regulated, and for a party of small government, I gotta say, sticking your nose into this one was just the wrong way to go.
Okay. Chad, I know, again, with the lawsuit was settled. The Supreme Court handed down their decision. I know that was one of the things you had been watching to see.
Rape, incest, life of the mother, those are the exceptions. In my opinion, as I see it, I've seen videos on abortion. My stance is pretty, I'm pro-life. And I'll always tug towards life. Always. Mm-hmm. There's going to be those exceptions. And then outside of that, the two parties right now kind of pull one way and pull another. And they use different terminology and they use different ways to get to, and they'll use special provisions, and that stuff gets tricky. I don't deny that. But ultimately, I'm going to tug towards life. And I believe, in my opinion, it would be the other way around if she gets in. And I'm not I don't question anyone's thought process on the manner. If you take that sticky of a subject and you say, hey, what is it? I just look at it as two people go into an abortion clinic and one person comes out. And I don't think that's right.
Okay. I am out of time. So I'm going to have you wrap up a little bit. I'm going to have Chad, you can start a little bit of, again, why people should vote for you. And also, if they have any questions, how they can get a chance to visit with you. Are you going to be out campaigning? What's going on?
They can hit me up on Facebook, Chad Bain for Iowa House. This is a great format, and I really appreciate you having us, because ultimately you got to kind of understand the thought process that a candidate has. That's the one thing. We go down there, we disappear behind closed doors, and there's a system, a algorithm that you use. You think one way, and you spit out a particular idea or a thought process. So I appreciate you having us very, very much. There's been a lot of local activity that's been going on, again, through economic development. I'll dovetail off that. They've hit that hard, and they've done a great, great job. So we've got a lot of exciting things going on in the county. But if anyone that wants to contact me, phone number 515-201-8039. Or hit me up on Facebook or email cbain@hotmail.com.
Okay. Penny?
Okay.
In conclusion,
I decided to run for House because I was not feeling represented. I had a representative that was invisible, unavailable, and when I very rarely got a reply, it was generally condescending. So I decided that people like me deserve to be represented in the legislature of Iowa. We need somebody who believes in feeding hungry children and funding our public schools and cleaning up our polluted water and rights for all Iowans, not just select groups. There are a lot of reasons why we need a change. One is that there's a supermajority in the legislature right now. So there is no back and forth, no... just pass whatever you want. Whatever you want gets through. And if it doesn't, then you'd probably be out of a job next year, and somebody else will be doing your job if you're a Republican. But so, I want to say that I will be available. I've been out, and I've personally knocked over 3,500 doors in my district talking to people. And so I'm meeting where there are. I am available. And I would continue to be available. I will not be invisible after election. You can see my website, pennyforiowa.com, and there's also a way to contact me on that. Email pennyvossler@iowa.gmail, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. You can find me all over the place.
Well, listeners, one of these two will be your new representative come January 2025. Again, it's your opportunity to go to the polls and vote. If you haven't already done so, you can go early to the auditor's office. But November 5th will be Election Day. I appreciate both of you taking time to come and visit with us and let folks know a little bit more about your campaigns. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jim.